90% of people want to stay in their own homes. What's kind of sad is that unfortunately a lot of people end up dying in the hospital, and that's not where they want to go. It's just not understanding what's going on, not getting hospice earlier, because that would avoid having them sent. Because sometimes they go to the hospital for something like excruciating pain. Well, if they had a hospice provider taking care of them, then the pain would be managed and they wouldn't do that emergency room visit, which leads to admission, and then that's where they die.
Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to powerfully change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton, founder and CEO of Jailbreak Leadership. In Jailbreak Leadership, we unlock the power of AI by creating your AI strategy, streamline the technical and logistical implementation, and most importantly, guide the AI adoption of your team. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. As I turned 70 this year, one thing I took for granted has moved to the forefront: health. What happens when your health starts to go the wrong way? If I'm honest, that's one of my biggest fears, because sooner or later, every one of us will face this reality. Whether it's for ourselves, our spouse, a parent, or someone we love, when that day comes, where do we start? Who do we trust? How do we make the decisions for the people who matter most? That's exactly why I'm so excited about our guest here today. Lauren Reynolds, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Lauren is a founder and administrator at At Home Nursing Care, serving families throughout San Diego and Los Angeles. Before she became a leader in home health care, she spent 17 years as an investigative journalist, earning 11 Emmy Awards while fighting for consumers and telling stories that matter. Lauren, I'm excited to hear your story and learn what every family should know before we need home care and explore the leadership lessons you've learned building such an impactful organization. Are you ready to get curious?
I am.
Well, obviously, it's in your DNA to go out and protect people. What's that all about?
I think it goes back to my mother. She was a trial attorney, but she was an honest one, an actual honest attorney. And she just always said, do the right thing the first time and help people who need help. So I was just raised with that culture. And I went into news reporting because somebody suggested it when I was 17 years old and I was a senior in high school. He said, you'd be a great news reporter. And I thought, okay. And I did it. It was that simple.
What's it take to make a great news reporter?
My first job was a very small market. I remember I earned $14,500 a year. I worked 60 hours a week.
Tough way to get rich, huh?
I could barely afford my electric bill and my rent and all of that. My parents had to help me. And then I had to move to a bigger market to make a tiny bit more money. And then another market move, which I was very lucky to get to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that's a market that's very similar to San Diego. I worked there, but they signed me to a 6-month contract because I was pretty young. They didn't know if I was good enough to be there. And the 6 months included winter.
They didn't tell you about that part up front.
I didn't realize it would be zero and then negative 25 with the wind chill factor. So
Are you Southern California?
Born and raised in California.
See, that was a shock.
I didn't understand why people lived there, honestly. I thought they live here because they've never been to California. Now, of course, they love it. It's just the weather was such a shock.
Gotta have the seasons.
Oh, yes. They're used to it. They are okay staying inside all winter because you can't do outdoor sports. You can ski and skate, I guess. But I was freezing. And so I applied for an open position at Channel 10 here in San Diego. And I left. And the day I left, it was 0 degrees in Milwaukee. And I landed in Lindbergh Field and it was sunny in 72. It was January 5th. 1995.
My first job out of college, I worked for Honeywell. It was, their headquarters are in Minneapolis. I hopped on a plane once without a jacket thinking, I don't know, it didn't cross my mind. And that's kind of stupid because I grew up in the Northeast, so I know there's winters, but somehow I got to go, oops, I forgot my jacket.
Oh, you needed the big, jacket was rated to negative 50 because I was an outdoor reporter. So it wasn't like I was in winter weather in a building with a heater on. I was in the car with a photographer outside for 8 hours in the freezing cold. And so it really made me appreciate San Diego. I mean, I went to school here. I graduated from UCSD. So I loved San Diego. And being in Milwaukee made me really want to come back home.
So you just had to go where you had to go get those credentials you needed.
That's how you advance. Yeah. And I was very lucky to get the job in San Diego. What was funny is they were actually advertising for a bilingual reporter. And so I applied. They called me and they said, wow, you look great. We really like you. But unfortunately, we need somebody who can speak Spanish. Well, no problema. Yo puedo hablar español. I can speak Spanish. I'm bilingual. Why did you think I applied for this job?
Where did that come from?
Again, my mother loved languages. And so she said, you should always know more than one language.
Wow.
And in California, it's better to know Spanish. So I was in Spanish immersion my whole elementary school life. A lot of my friends spoke English as a second language. So we would speak in Spanish. And I loved it. I took Spanish all the way through college. And I actually was the Spanish language reporter for Channel 10 for many years. Now there's more diversity. Now there are a lot more people who speak Spanish that are applying for those jobs. But back in the day, there were a lot fewer. So that's how I got the job, because I could speak Spanish.
Wow. You gotta love that.
Yeah.
Well, your mom set you up.
She did. She was great. She was great. And, you know, my mom is the reason I even started my home care business.
I was going to say, quite a little move from being a reporter to now, let's go be an entrepreneur. Let's go start a business. What's the backstory there?
So my mom, unfortunately, was 50 years old, and she was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. And even though it was stage one, it was a very aggressive form of cancer. So she was clear for a few years, and then it comes back. And in her last year, she died at 58. In her last year, she needed in-home care. So I got to see firsthand. I actually went part-time at Channel 10, and they were very gracious to allow me to do that so I could also take care of my mother, who was in LA, and then I had two young kids. So you have to hire care because we just couldn't do
can't
it all.
Be there, yeah.
I can't, yeah, we couldn't do it all. I just loved the nurse who supervised my mom's care and really felt drawn to that industry. So my mom passed away. I go back to work full time. In fact, I'd signed a 2-year contract at Channel 10. So I had another 2 years to complete, which was probably good because it gave me time to really think, is this the right move? This is totally different. Being a business owner in California is hard, and surviving is hard. Learning all the rules. I remember when I first had my first employees, I felt like, why am I in charge of all of this stuff? This is so detailed, and why do I have to do all this stuff? But you have to do it. You have to do every single thing, because not doing it has very harsh consequences. I thought about it, and my heart was in that direction, and Channel 10 did offer a extension, you know, another contract extension to me. And I politely declined and said, I'm going into home healthcare, which I also believed was a very growing field as opposed to the television broadcasting, which had so much competition from so many different areas that all of our salaries were actually going down at the time. And I was very young. And
it's not the direction you want to be going.
No, yeah. I said, at this rate, I'm going to be paying you to let me come to work when I'm 50. And I just, I'm too ambitious for that, and I have too much energy for that. They understood. We left on great terms, and I'm still very close to a lot of the people that were there. But I launched my own company, and it was scary. It was very, very scary, and I'm so grateful that I did it.
Yeah, that's a big move right there. We were sharing, talking before we started here, that I've worked for my wife for a little over a year in her nonprofit. And I haven't had a corporate job since like 2000. All of a sudden, it's like I'm getting this employee manual. It's like, you know, it's like 100 pages. I'm like, oh, what the heck is this thing?
You know? And you read every page, of course, right?
Of course. And then you got to watch all these videos and all this stuff. And sexual. I mean, it was like an endless list of things. And I'm just going, oh my goodness.
And the state keeps adding more and more and more. And I know their intentions are good, but yeah. It's like,
the burden,
wow.
The burden's unbelievable.
Well, and I just know a lot of my employees aren't even looking at it. They just sign and, it, you know. But when it's important, they can go back and look it up. Like if they wonder, what do I do in this situation? Then that's when they open it. Like, for example, when an employee becomes pregnant, that's when they read what's in our handbook about the Family Leave Act and all of that, because now it applies to them and
what
makes sense to them.
To
right.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going to happen? The regulations are very hard, and in healthcare especially, and they change every year. Part of the reason that I've been successful and our managers have been successful is that I am a type A hyper-compliant person, and I don't want to hurt myself or my family by doing something wrong or breaking a rule. So I just stay on top of it. And all you have to do is the right thing every single day. And it works out generally.
It's a good mantra. We need to let folks know what you do.
So my company is called At Home Nursing Care, and I launched it in 2010. We provide non-medical in-home care, or caregiving, as most people refer to it, and also private duty, skilled nursing, Medicare home health, and care management. It's all employee-driven. So my employees are background checked. drug checked, trained, supervised, full W-2 employees. They have great benefits. We treat them very well because we want them to treat our clients very well. And we pay fair wages, especially for this kind of work, which is really important and meaningful, but sometimes very hard. We serve all of San Diego County and the West Side, South Bay areas of Los Angeles, actually where I grew up.
Curious about how you ended up in LA. So, okay, there's the story behind that.
I sort of thought that I was going to start in San Diego, open the branch in LA, which I did, and then connect Orange County. My license actually goes from LA all the way to the border. So I have this expansive license, two licenses actually. Opening LA was so much work, I just haven't gotten to Orange County. Although we do have clients in Orange County.
Some crossover.
There is some crossover at opening another location. I just am not ready to do at this point.
So you actually have a license for a region? That's how that works?
Yes.
It's not just the state of California. It's actually, you're a county.
Well, it's a state license. So we have a home care organization license, which is from the California Department of Social Services. And we have a home health agency license, which is from the California Department of Public Health. So they're two different licenses, and one is more for skilled care, and then the other is for non-skilled care. But you have to name your geographic area, and you have to only go a certain distance. So when I got my home health license, they allowed it to go from all the way up to Los Angeles. I don't know if that would happen today. They're kind of cracking down. I mean, luckily, I'm a very ethical business and no issues. But with all of the fraud in the industry right now, there's a moratorium on licenses. So you can't open a new agency at this point for the Department of Public Health. And that's because of all the Medicare and the hospice fraud. They're just tougher. I think if I were to get a license today, it would be much more narrow in geographic area. But I got it a long time ago.
How sad to think about there's fraud in this space, right? That this is like such a need and then to think about there's fraud.
It's amazing what people are willing to risk. These fraudsters, and they're just crooks, really. And they're stealing people's Medicare numbers and identities, and then billing the government for visits they never do, for patients that aren't really patients, but they get millions of dollars. Luckily, there does seem to be a crackdown. Even our industry knew about the hospice situation in the LA area because they were all in like one building, hundreds of them, and there was no way that was viable. We compete for business in this industry. There was no way there were enough patients for that explosion of the number of hospices. Yeah. So our organization was saying, this has got to be fraud. And it was nice to see the federal government do something and the state government do something about it recently.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, it's really tough work that you're doing. You know, I went through the whole thing with my parents here back a few years ago, and I know how difficult that is. Interesting, even enough, I got a buddy who's 85 and been having some health issues. I'm kind of going, what are we going to do here next? And last night, my wife's going, you know, what's your view of the world? You go, I want to stay in my house. Like, okay. I go, well, what does that mean?
Right.
What's that going to look like? So I could have that conversation over lunch. Like, what's the next steps? I like him to make some decisions before it's needed. It's like my desire.
Well, you should. That's the first thing you should think about. 90% of people want to stay in their own homes, age in their own homes. And what's kind of sad is, you know, till they die. And unfortunately, a lot of people end up dying in the hospital. Yeah, and that's not where they want to go. And it's, you know, it's just not understanding what's going on, not getting hospice earlier, because that would avoid having them sent. Because sometimes they go to the hospital for something like excruciating pain. Well, if they had a hospice provider taking care of them, I don't do hospice, but if they had a hospice provider, then the pain would be managed and they wouldn't do that emergency room visit, which leads to an admission, and then that's where they die. So you do have to think about it. One thing both my dad and I did after my mom passed away was we both bought long-term care insurance. And just because of looking at the expense, that's not the right answer for everyone. But at the time that we purchased it, which was a while ago, it made sense for us. And that's one thing to think about. One thing I tell people that they don't even realize is the moment your kids turn 18, you need a power of attorney. They need to elect someone, because I've seen some terrible things happen where there's some conflict between divorced parents, you know, and an intact family, you might not have an issue, but if somebody's divorced and then there's some bad feelings and then there's who gets to speak for the child, and well, not the child, but the grown child, it's like, make sure you have a power of attorney, even at 18. So I've really preached that to all of my friends, and we all did it. Our kids have wills and power of attorney named and power of healthcare named. So you need to think about that. Everybody needs that because we all age.
It's a given.
We all age. Yeah. You know, most people will need some sort of care at home. you know, hopefully we're all very old and we're very happy, but, you know, I've seen people with dementia as young as 50 needing 24-hour care.
Yeah, it was kind of, with this whole thing with my parents, they were living in Arizona, and I'd go out there and go, hey, I think it's time for you guys to, I'm my only child, my sister passed away some time ago, and I go, it's about time to start coming to California, think about getting closer to me. Nah, this is where our friends are. I'm like, oh, your friends are all dead. What do you think of that? But anyways, you know, they didn't want to make the move. And then ultimately, they both are in the care center together because first one fell and then the other one fell. So we go out to go see them. Like, yeah, okay, we're ready to move now.
Right.
And so the very next day, we go to visit them. And it's like all kinds of craziness going on because my mom's having a heart attack or something. My mom is adamant about not going to the hospital. She decides she never want to go to the hospital again. They go, Mom, you got to go to the hospital. So they take her to the hospital. She's at the hospital. She's like, refuses service. They go, oh, she has to go to hospice. So anyways, it's just kind of this crazy one thing after another.
I hope the hospice worked out for her, though.
It actually was. The people in hospice are amazing.
They're amazing.
So they came to the hospital. They got it all teed up. They were living in some complex, which clearly was not what she needed. She needed more support than that. So they ended up, they said, you should go check out these things. In the meantime, my dad augured in. He got an infection, ends up passing. So it was like, unexpected. So my mom actually ended up lasting longer than my dad. Who knew?
Who knew?
So, yeah. So we moved her here. She was on hospice, and she lived in one of those, like, six-person room and whatever kind of thing.
Right, board and care.
Board and care. Actually, I always think of board and brew.
Well, that sounds more fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds a lot more fun. But
anyways, that turned out to be perfect. But I'm observing the people doing the work, and it's not easy.
No.
A lot of seniors are very ornery and not even sure why they're there and all kinds of stuff. My mom was never easy, and she definitely wasn't easy in her 90s.
I don't think I've ever had a truly easy client. And I always tell my staff, well, that's why they need help. I mean, people don't come to us because everything's going well and their reasoning is intact and they're physically great. Then they don't need us. People come to us with serious problems and behavioral issues, mental health issues, just injury, accident. I feel like I've seen it all. And people, sometimes callers are so embarrassed to describe the situation. They'll say, my mom, she's just so picky and she doesn't like anybody overweight, for example, and she's very mean and she'll send them home. They don't like tattoos. I just don't worry. Like, we understand. And what you're saying is so similar to what we've heard so many times. This is new for you,
right?
But this is everyday life for us. So nothing phases us. And we just, you know, do the best we can, create a plan of care, do the right match with a caregiver, and then monitor the situation and make sure it works.
Yeah. I just want to add in that one of the reasons that you and I got together was because we met here at the BBB. And you're a finalist for the Torch Awards.
I'm a finalist. I could not believe it. I'm so excited. I remember watching a commercial where a plumbing company talked about how they won this Torch Award for ethics. And I actually thought, how do you get that? I don't know who nominated me.
Yeah,
somebody
right.
nominated my company. I have no idea who it is.
Yeah, they can nominate, but you got to do the work.
Yes. And there was an extensive application process, but I cared a lot. I put a lot of effort into it and wanted to show what we do. I hope I win. We don't know if I'm going to win yet until September, but I'm so grateful to be a finalist because I realized that there were 5,000 nominations. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It's a really big deal. So I'm just grateful to the BBB for taking the nomination from the anonymous person. Thank you. And allowing me to come this far.
Yeah. It was a very fun day. I was one of the judges. So I got to sit here for 8 hours where everybody came in and gave their 15-minute pitch. I got
right.
to hear about all the amazing companies.
Right.
Of people just doing really good work here in our community, which is what this podcast is all about, is businesses doing really good works.
And congratulations to any business that's,
yes.
you know, in California, doing their best, following the rules, being ethical, telling customers the honest truth. Like, sometimes people call and they'll ask for something that I know I can't give well. And I'm very honest about why that won't work. And usually they listen. Usually, okay, that makes sense. I need to do it this way instead. Or I just suggest a different way. And they appreciate it.
So I want to talk a little bit about leadership. So you went from being an investigative reporter, like, let's go start my own business. And now you got two locations. How many people you got working for you? Quite a few.
About 80. About 80 employees. Full employees.
That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people, but you know, they are the nicest people. I loved the people in news, especially the women. Like, I made really strong friendships with my 15 years at Channel 10 here in San Diego. And as I was leaving, one of my colleagues said, you're about to go work with the nicest people on earth. And it's true. To be a caregiver,
you have to be. Right?
You have to care. You have to have empathy. You have to want to care for somebody. You have to be able to put your own feelings aside, especially with somebody with dementia. who might be saying, you know, cruel things to you, but they don't mean it. It's just coming out. To work every day to make somebody safe and comfortable at home, they're really nice people.
Yes, for sure. I think when there are challenges, do they take it on? You got to be careful where the line is. My wife sees that a lot in the nonprofit space, where after X amount of time in the space, people just start to get kind of aggravated with things because, you know, it just starts to get old. But yeah. People get in this business because of the right heart, right?
Right. And
at least the people who are taking it serious get in for the right heart.
Right. And
not the fraudsters.
Oh, my goodness, no. And nursing students make really great caregivers, or people who want to go to nursing school because they come in and they work as a caregiver and they know we'll write a really nice letter of recommendation because schools are competitive and they are just the best. They're just trying so hard. We need more younger caregivers. I was looking at the age of my staff, and all of a sudden, I've been there 15 years. I'm older, but a lot of my staff has been with me 14, 15, 12. They're coming with me. And I'm like, wow, we need some young blood. We need some younger people. And it's also a great job for somebody who's, you know, has kids at home and wants to work during school hours, make a little bit of extra money, but then be able to go and pick up the kids after school. It's a great occupation for that as well.
So what are the leadership lessons here learned? I mean, you've got to be quite a few. Give me your top three.
One thing I've learned, and I've really tried to make my staff feel this way, is don't overreact. When something happens that maybe is not exactly what you want, keep your emotions in check and work through it. Don't make any decisions if you're tired or threatened or having a bad day, or maybe you have a personal issue that's not anything to do with work. Like, don't make big decisions under duress. I think that's one thing, is just non-emotional, calm. We recently had a problem with a long-term care insurance company where they said we didn't have malpractice insurance, so they gave our client a lower reimbursement. And the client flew off the handle, and my care manager flew off the handle, and I just remained calm and said, well, they're wrong. Let's not get upset. In New York, where the insurance is based, they call it malpractice insurance. In California, we call it professional liability insurance. We're just going to get a letter from the carrier explaining they've made an error. And so it's like, just don't react emotionally. Just do the work.
Right.
Just do the work. So that's one thing. The other is set a good example. I'm generally happy. You seem like a generally happy person. I don't raise my voice. I don't say mean things to people. Always polite. Always, always polite. Even when we have some irate, you know, we have some clients with some behavioral mental health issues that might call.
And family members, I'm sure.
And family, who might call using colorful language and, you know, obviously mad about something. It's not usually reasonable or rational. And just always be polite. That way, my staff knows they have to treat each other that way. They have to treat clients that way, like setting a good example from the top.
So it's a standard that you want to have in the organization.
Mm-hmm. And then,
so you have a technique, Lauren?
A technique for that. How do I have a technique for that? I think it's just learned behavior. Always make somebody feel glad they met you, or like you're interested in them. You know, show some curiosity and be polite. And that just goes a long way in business and in personal life. And don't gossip. You know, make people feel like they can trust you. You don't talk about one person a certain way or another person a certain way. And then everybody feels invested in the same growth. They feel like they're part of a team. They feel like they're an important part. And that's important.
So how do you facilitate that? How do you make everyone feel part of an organization? Because your folks are kind of out in the field, right? They're not all sitting in an office looking at each other. We've got people out working at the site. Yes. How do you help people feel part of a team?
I think with the leadership team, it's easier because they're there, or they're checking in. With the caregivers, what we try to do is survey them. So we survey them once a year and ask, what changes do you think we need to make? What kind of training would you like? Because some of our training is set by statute. We have to do certain things. But there are other hours where we can focus on what they're seeing in the community, what they're seeing in their patient population. So we ask for their input. And I think that goes a long way. We write birthday cards and work anniversary cards to them. They're all hand signed. Every holiday, I give them a gift card and I handwrite a note to them. And I try to keep track. I keep little notes and I try to keep track of something good that they did or some good feedback that they got throughout the year. And I reference that in the letter just, you know, so that they feel like I'm paying attention and that I care and that they matter to me. Because without my employees, I have nothing.
Right.
There's no company without them.
But that takes a big effort to do that. And most people don't do it.
It's funny because it's a big effort in terms of the time to do it. But what a small thing to make a big difference.
Yeah, it's huge.
Right.
It's like, it's huge. Just a... We all want to hear that, right? We all want to be validated and seen and heard.
And not just a boilerplate. Not just a boilerplate, like, you know, and these days I'm writing, you know, thank you for your 15 years of service, and the company is 15 and a half years old. So I'm so privileged for that. We even give them little pins. So they have little pins that show how many years they've been with us. And my staff is great. I think I really got lucky. I learned to hire. I learned how to hire well.
So tell us about that. So how do you hire? That is a critical skill.
And
most people don't do a very good job of it.
Right.
On both sides of the equation, by the way.
Totally. What is it? Hire slowly, fire quickly. So we have gotten good at listening to people's answers in interviews. You can tell a lot. We always do in-person interviews after we've screened their application and their resume and all of that. And you can learn a lot from an interview. Completely bad-mouthing the last agency they worked for, saying confidential things they shouldn't be saying about a client. That's not going to be a good match for us. There's going to be another version of that story somebody else has. And we just look for people who are in caregiving for the right reasons. Because again, you can make a good living in caregiving if you work good hours. Like, so you need to work a decent amount of hours and you can make a good living. If you're just doing it for money, you're not going to be very happy.
That's a tough job, right?
It's hard. We always say we're people putting people with people, and people mess things up. So we never promise perfection. We just promise to be responsive and honest about it. So if your motivation is like to make a lot of money, then you need to go into a different industry where maybe money is the bigger deal than in caregiving.
A financial advisor or a stockbroker or something.
Something.
It's all about the money.
Right. Yes. We're good at that. Obviously, we screen people for physical fitness post-offer. Again, because you can only do it in California after you've offered them a job. Now you can screen them for any physical limitations, and we do drug screening, and then your normal background screening, which is mandated by the state.
You have to have that for your
people. Yes.
People are going to people's houses.
Then they have to complete our orientation. And so we get another
boot camp.
Right. We get another opportunity. Do they complete it within the time that we said they needed to complete it by? Are they late for an interview? Because who's late for an interview?
Exactly.
I hired a salesperson once, and he showed up for his first day of work half hour late. I should have fired him that moment. I fired him within 5 days because he was never going to be appropriate, responsive, professional. He was going to show up late for client appointments. You can't have that. I would never be late. To be here today, I was not late. You just can't be late.
I remember, this goes way, way back. I had a job interview in upstate New York. So I flew to New York, got to whatever airport, and we landed somewhere because of fog. And I'm sitting next to some guy who was from there. He says, when they have fog, they have fog. We're not going to get there tonight. So he goes, I'm renting a car. You want to go with me? I went, yeah, okay. Right. So we actually got with him. And I rode in the car with him to get up to where I needed to be the next day. It was kind of funny because I think they thought I was on the flight because it didn't show up the next morning. I go, no, I'm here. I made it.
Oh, see, I'm sure they were impressed.
Yeah, I got the job offer.
Right, of course. Of course. Found a way.
Makes a big difference. Yeah, exactly.
You found a way.
Exactly.
Yeah, that reminds me, my son played baseball all through high school, and he got invited to this big, important baseball thing. And we flew to Washington, D.C. We were trying to get to Cary, North Carolina, and the flight was canceled. And I hired an Uber or a taxi? I don't remember, but I hired a taxi, and we took a taxi, 5 hours, maybe even 7 hours. I can't remember, honestly, but the baseball people who were there were just like, wow, they used it as an example.
Yeah.
This mom hired a taxi.
This mom cares.
And got here, got him here. Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. But for anybody who's looking for a job, don't show up late.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
It's so easy. What do they say? Just show up. I always say we answer our phone. So we don't have AI answering our phone or a receptionist. We answer our phone. And it's amazing how you can talk to clients that have probably called 5 other agencies and said you were the only one who answered. And it's like low-hanging fruit. I shouldn't tell that. I shouldn't tell my competition that. Answer your phones. But it's like they should know better.
You think that'd be a no-brainer, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's not a secret.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of back when I was in the leadership roles and hiring people, I always said that little twitch you see in the interview will become a big twitch later. So when you see this little behavior that seems a little odd, that's why I also like to do it with more than one person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Takes the pressure off you as an interviewer. You don't have to be so trying to think what the next question I'm going to ask versus actually listening and watching.
Right.
You just get a whole lot more better data coming back.
And some people.
And a confirmation. Yeah, I saw that too. Or yeah, that was an interesting answer. Right.
Well, and I have this wonderful employee named Linda, and she's been with me for like 15 years. And we always said, Linda is so nice. She likes everyone. that's probably not the right person to do your interviews. Like, she just sees the best in everyone and just missed those. Oh, well, she was 15 minutes late, but you know, she just hit more traffic, that kind of thing. So we always joke with Linda. Linda, you would hire everyone.
Don't let Linda in the
right,
charge.
Yeah. Right. Linda, you just handle, so she handles our like employee appreciation stuff. She's perfect for it.
Yeah. The other big thing I think in interviewing is like this other, what are your values? Like what kind of drives you? It's like, for example, if you're in a fast-paced, early-stage startup company and you go, oh, we got to hire a CFO and here's this amazing guy with this big track record for working for some corporation. He shows up in your business and he's used to like slow rolling everything and keeping money really tight. It's just not a good fit. So look at asking those kinds of questions, like, here's how we operate. Are we a fast-moving, quick company? Are we slow-moving, takes a while? Are we a bureaucrat, right? I mean,
right.
You got to get those right fits. And you can ask open-ended questions to figure that out.
I think timing is important, too. I have this wonderful nurse who was working in skilled nursing during COVID, and she was a manager, and it was so hard for her. It was just a terrible, she was working 12 hours. People were calling out. She was having to sleep there. She was working so hard, and she actually, once things settled down a little bit, she quit. And she just thought, I'm done working. I'm done. And she lasted 8 months and then saw our ad. We were looking for a nurse manager. And it was just perfect because she was ready to get back to work, but she didn't have to do what she had to do previously. She didn't want that. Yeah. So it was just the right timing for her and for us.
Now she knew what she wanted.
Yes.
I always find it interesting when you interview somebody, I go, you live like an hour and a half from here. It's not a problem. Okay.
Goodness.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem.
It eventually is a problem.
Eventually it is a problem.
And with the gas prices today, too, when we hire caregivers, we definitely talk to them about, okay, where do you live and which areas do you want to travel to? And I find that caregivers will travel longer for longer cases. So if it's a 12-hour case, you know, 3 days a week, they'll do that one because they make good overtime, especially too, because they're paid overtime for that. And so they'll do that, but they're not going to do that for a 4-hour case. They're not going to go probably longer than 25 miles. And so that's part of our planning, how we match our clients with our caregivers, geographic, personality, experience level, and then just what people are looking for. But we have to take where they live into consideration.
Just like Saturday, I popped up to San Clemente to have breakfast with a friend of mine from Orange County and then see one of my kids. It's 50 miles right from my house. Mm-hmm. Popped up there in less than 50 minutes. Time to come home, 2.5 hours.
Oh my goodness. Right. So I used to commute to Channel 10 from North County, and it would take me 45 minutes to get there every day, but an hour and a half to get home.
Yeah.
So it was 2 hours and 15 minutes in the car.
Shoot
every single day. Yeah. I think I'd lasted 4 years doing that. And, you know, it was a great job, but sitting in traffic all the time is tough, and the gas prices are really hurting the people who work. Yeah, that's why I hate that mileage tax thing. I'm like, but that hits the people who are commuting. They are already strapped.
Right.
Don't do a mileage tax.
These people aren't living next to their corporate whatever. Because
no, they're not living in Rancho Santa Fe. They're going to drive there to take care of clients, but they're not living there. Let's not tax them to death.
So I have another leadership question for you. So I was so impressed. We're sitting here talking before we got started, and you were saying how you just came off this 2-week vacation, which I think is super impressive. A, that you took a 2-week vacation, and then two, you're able to take a 2-week vacation.
Yes.
How did that happen? How did you get to that point where you say, I can actually walk away from this business for a few minutes and it won't implode?
Well, I always say I don't run the day-to-day operations of the business. So that took time because, of course, when you start a business, it's usually you and if you're lucky, one other person. You know, it's you and an assistant. And you grow from there. And I was the salesperson. I remember once early on, one of my employees said, well, who's the IT department? And I just laughed. I was like, me? What do you need?
Or you.
Right. You learn to figure it out. Like, how do we figure this out? Now I do have a small company that I contract with to do IT now, but at the time, nothing. And so I was the salesperson. I was the administrator. I was the manager. I was the planner. I was the budgeter, the accountant, all of that. But I knew that in order to make the business successful, I had to put people in the right roles and give them some autonomy over their work, the ability to make decisions and just run the business. And as long as somebody is well-trained and they're in the right position, they prefer that.
Should work, yeah.
Nobody wants to be micromanaged. And I honestly would be a terrible micromanager because I feel like I should tell you one time I want this done. I don't want to have to check that you did it. So if I don't know you finished it because I told you to, then we're not the right fit for each other. I also knew, like, the goal of every business owner eventually is to sell their business. And the buyers don't want to buy a business where the owner is in control of everything. And so the value of the business vanishes the moment the owner vanishes.
That's such a great point, Lauren.
So I just made sure that the business is, I mean, I have no plans to sell, but right now, but eventually, someday when I want to retire, not for at least 10 years, eventually. So you have to set up the business that way. And I also believe in promoting from within. So my operations manager started with me 10 years ago as a scheduler. So she got to learn everything about the business over the course of all of these years. And when it came time to replace the operations manager, she was the ideal fit. She understood it all. She knows how to do everything. Scheduling, hiring, how to price the care, how to deal with benefits, all of that. So she's ideal. And she came from within. So I don't need to babysit her. She's very competent. She's very smart. And she's had the right training and experience.
Back to having the right people in the right spot and trained and ready to go. Yeah.
Right. If you can manage it. Yeah. Yes.
It's not easy. But even then, sometimes bosses have a hard time letting go of things, is what in my experience.
Well, I was thinking about it because sometimes I feel guilty about my 2-week vacation, and it was a 2-week disengaged vacation.
Right. You had no email.
It was in a national park, so there was no email, no Wi-Fi, barely any cellular.
It's a good test.
It's great. It was great. But I thought about it. The last time I had gone on an extended vacation was 2019. And I took my kids to Europe when my son graduated high school. So there has been a bit, you know, I take time off here, a week here, like people do.
Yeah, yeah.
2 weeks is, it's a long time. I almost wish I could do a month. That'll be my next goal. It's like
next,
1 month. Yeah. Next year, maybe 1 month.
I actually had someone on the podcast quite a while ago who actually created his business with that mindset. And he truly built the business around the idea that he was not going to be there. So, I mean, that was his whole intention. So that's what he did. And he was successful doing it.
A lot of people do it that way.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, a lot of people. I do love the business. I love the company. But I only like certain things. Like I don't want to do onboarding. Like, I don't want to do that stuff anymore. I like thinking about the future. I don't mind the regulations. I'm the one that's in charge of what's the new law. How do we make sure we meet the deadline to have it implemented and whatever? I'm actually very good at that, and I enjoy that. And I enjoy videos for, like, our YouTube channel, and that's fun, too. My employees can handle it.
Yeah, nice. So give me one heartfelt story. You must have some amazing stories of things that have happened with clients that are just touch people's heart.
Oh, there's so many. Let me think of one that really stands out. I think one that really stands out was a neighbor of mine who had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is just god-awful. It's just a terrible disease. And he was a military veteran, and he called me and said he needed some care because his wife commuted to San Francisco, and they had one son. And I showed up in his house, and I was like, wow, this guy needs a lot more care than he thinks. And I knew he was a veteran, so I said, are you signed up for the VA? Because there's a great VA benefit called the Community Care Network, where you can get in-home caregiving paid for by the VA, but you have to be part of the VA. And he had never signed up. He was a young guy. So I had the application with me, and he couldn't hold a pencil. That's how far his ALS had gone. So I filled it out for him. He was able to sign his signature. I drove it down to the VA San Diego in La Jolla and said to the intake, this guy, he's a Marine and he has ALS and he needs help. Please expedite this. And to the VA's credit, he was approved very quickly. And the VA helped facilitate about 50 hours of care per week for this young man. I think when he passed away, he was maybe 55. And then when he couldn't be at home anymore because he needed 24/7 nursing care, he went to a wonderful facility, again, funded by the VA, and they took very good care of him because they considered it military-related, his ALS. They believed it came from his military service, and so that's why they took such good care of him. And so, I mean, I can't imagine if he hadn't called me, would he have received that care that allowed him to stay home as long as possible? And then allowed him to go somewhere where he could receive proper care until he passed away, and he has passed away. So I think that sticks out.
Kudos to you to make that happen. Right?
Thank you.
You went the extra mile.
Thank you. I've done it twice. I've done that twice. So there's another client, very similar story, a veteran who didn't know about this benefit and had never signed up, and I got them signed up and got them approved for care. Well, the VA has a process for approving them for care, but just educating people about that. We're also really good with long-term care insurance. About 40% of our clients now have long-term care insurance, mainly because care can be expensive. So those who have the insurance have choices about you know, how much care they can get and what they can do. We've gotten really good at working through policies for people and getting claims filed and claims approved and claims paid. So I'm very proud of that. Definitely long-term care experts as well.
Good job.
Thank you.
We got to put a bow on this, Lauren. I always like to finish with, what's the one big idea? People didn't remember anything from our conversation. What's the one thing you want them to remember?
Do the right thing the first time and be polite.
Be polite. Wow.
Your life will be much better. Your work life something. And your personal life.
There's something. We don't see a lot of that anymore.
Just be polite.
Well, I appreciate you coming in today, and you're doing some amazing work here in our community and in LA. So thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.